Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of your Italian-American moment. I'm your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and connect with us on LinkedIn, and check out our new YouTube page. My guest today is Daniel Paterna, the author of The Feast of the Seven Fishes, A Brooklyn Italian's Recipe Celebrating Food and Family. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. And that's a great topic and a great subject. And especially being we're about 8-9 days shy of Christmas Eve, it's a perfect
You caught me at the right time because I literally today bought my baklava.
Oh my gosh. All right. You got to dry and do all that great stuff. Well, that's awesome.
I got to put it in the water for four days.
Put it in the water. Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. Tell us, Daniel, tell us about your, where you're from and your upbringing.
I was born in the northern part of Bensonhurst, in a house that my grandfather had built in the 1920s. My grandfather was a tailor. He worked for a very, well-known store named John Wanamaker's, which is on Wanamaker Place in the lower part of Manhattan.
And I would assume the neighborhood was very Italian, correct?
Very Italian. We grew up in a sort of industrial part of this town, very few houses, but my mother grew up. She used to say she had 16 cousins on the block, and I'm not making this up. There are literally five houses on my block. Because the rest of the real estate is either, back in the day, they were horse stables, greenhouses, farms. But my grandfather built his house next to his brother's house. And then another brother was the house next to it. So like you said before, somebody had to be here already. You know, they came little by little. Once one person, one part of the family settled the area and it was safe, and that's when people started building families in the same area.
So your mom grew up in that house?
My mom and her two sisters were born in that house.
Born in that house, and then you grew up in that house?
As a matter of fact, it's a little macabre, but I think it's very sentimental. When we were children, when my grandmother had us as grandchildren, when we lost our baby teeth, she had my grandfather mix some mortar and put the teeth in the mortar and put it in the foundation of the building.
Wow.
As a sort of symbolic foundational gesture that this is our family's house.
Do you guys still own the house?
We still own the house, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you have relatives living there?
Yeah, in fact, I was in a News 12. Yeah, we lived there at the lower floor. We rent the upstairs apartment. I grew up in the upstairs apartment. It's a two-bedroom, 2x4. You know, I have an older brother. He's 4 years older. He's an engineer. I'm the artist. So we get along.
That's awesome. Great. That's great. Okay. I know you have been to Italy. Where is the family from in Italy?
My mom's side of the family, my grandmother is from Vico Quince, which is in the Bay of Naples, between Naples and Sorrento. And my grandfather, her husband, is from Capua in Caserta. Now, Capua is famous for Spartacus. That's where he was from.
Okay, and that's the Via, region, correct?
Yeah, Via Appia actually goes through Capua. Right.
Oh, okay.
And my father's side of the family is from Basilicata.
I got you. Okay, beautiful. And you've been to all places in Italy or no?
I've been, you know, most of this book focuses on my mother's side of the family because I knew very little of my father's parents because they passed away before I was born. So the only person I really interacted with was the only grandmother I had was Luisella. Her name was Luigia in Italy, but her name was changed to Luisella during immigration. I spent several, you know, good 20 years knowing her, I'd say 18 years. And we had a great relationship, and she was my connection to the homeland. As a matter of fact, in the late 60s and 70s, when my mom felt like she was going back to work. You remember all of the sort of, you know, dinners that were produced, like Hamburger Helper and Chef Boyardee and all these TV dinners back in the day when all that stuff was a rage. My mother was more Americanized than clearly my grandmother. And before I went upstairs to have dinner or lunch, my grandmother would make me an Italian meal.
So you had to pass her apartment to get to yours.
No, I was in the basement, so I had to go upstairs to my mother's apartment. Okay. My grandmother was in the basement.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So secretly, she'd make me a frittata with mozzarella and basil. Very simple. And then she would pull out postcards of Naples and Vesuvius, and she started crying because she missed everything about where she was from. She never went back.
Never.
Never went back. She was illiterate, both in Italian and English, till the day she died. She couldn't write. And my grandfather was fairly educated. He spoke three languages. He taught himself English and French. And he was, and she waited 10 years to marry him.
So she knew all her recipes by memory.
By rote, yes. You know, there was no recipe cards. As a matter of fact, the book, the premise, the visual hook of the book are the recipe cards of my mom's. And she was the only one in the family that actually archived these recipes. And every time the recipe came up, the season came where we had to make a dish that represents the season. Because she didn't make it every day, she'd call one of her relatives and make different annotations on the cards. Over the years, those annotations built up to the equivalent to me, in my world, Mozart's manuscripts. They're just beautiful to look at. And every time that recipe box came out on our kitchen table, I knew it was just, I was going to see my cousins, people were going to come over the house, we were going to cook together, you know, make the struffoli. You know, my aunts came over down the basement, my grandmother's three daughters, and my cousins came over, and all we did was make struffoli all night. Homework wasn't even on the radar. Like, it was, what was more important was making the struffoli.
Wow.
And I don't know if you've ever made it, but it's very laborious.
Is it? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a very, very special upbringing.
Yeah, it was very special. We, I don't know, it was just, my mother swore off going to Florida to retire anywhere else. She was going to live and die in that same house she was born in. She could walk to the shops. She didn't necessarily need a car, although she drove a stick shift. It was not, she didn't wear a house dress. She was a modernized woman. I mean, she took it upon herself to go back to work. And I have a funny story for you about going back to work. So when she went back to work, you know, a lot of the kitchen work was up to us. You know, I was in high school. I was sort of learning. And the first time I made pasta was a disaster because my mom was at work. She said, Daniel, when you get home from school, put up a pot of water, get it warm. So when she came home, she'd be ready, you know, put the pasta in the water very quickly. So I thought I was doing a good thing. So I cooked the pasta at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but I left the pasta in the water thinking, wow, I should leave it in the water so it stays warm. So my mother came home and she was completely mystified and stunned because that was my first attempt. It was hysterical.
Yeah.
It was all a bunch of mush.
That's okay. You learned. So tell me about where the whole idea came for this book.
So when I moved from Brooklyn to Boston for a career move, I was there for about 6 years. And from that point, I was asking my mom for a lot of recipes to cook for myself. And I went home for the holidays. And every time I went home for the holidays, I would document the process. You know, shopping for the fish, you know, cleaning the calamari. And over time, I built this sort of catalog of photographs, some of which I photographed over for the book. And then when I became a dad, and I had twins of my own, boy and a girl, I realized that in so many ways, we often always default to going to grandma's house. You know, grandma does it. But when grandma eventually passes on, you got to have some experience. Otherwise, it gets lost. It evaporates. So on that premise alone, I became more diligent about spending more time documenting, asking my mother questions about recipes, photographing her recipe cards. And I always shop with her. And then involving our children. And that to me was the key to the inspiration to the book, because this stuff has to pass on. And if you're not observing it in a practical sense, you're going to be lost. And I almost wrote the book, not necessarily for myself, although it's for me and about my family, but I wrote it for so many people like me and on my generation who depended on their grandparents. And no one lives enough with their grandparents anymore. You know, it's very rare these days. And I felt I was writing this for us. And it was a very, you know, all the dishes that are in the book are pretty much brick and mortar dishes that we all grew up with. But to me, weren't highlighted as sort of, you know, the stuff we grew up on. You know, generations of families grew up on it. So I romanced them in my camera to kind of, you know, illuminate them and give them the appearance that they justly deserved.
Well, that actually sounds great. I mean, I agree with you 1,000%. And there's something about those Italian grandparents, and when they're not here no more,
you
lose a lot.
a lot.
And thank God that you had the vision to realize that, hey, I better sit down and I better with them and I better start learning some things and, you know, to make it more of a realistic, practical thing to be able to reproduce. Not that we can ever reproduce exactly the things they did, but at least come close. And I totally agree with you about, like, we can't lose these things. I'm all about that. If you knew me,
yeah.
I mean, that's my whole existence is, not losing these traditions, not losing our knowledge of why we're proud in our history and all the things we've done as you know, when I say we, I mean Italian.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's a beautiful sentiment for writing the book.
Even using the same kitchen equipment that they used, you know, we still have my cheese grater because I was in charge of grating the cheese and making the breadcrumbs when I was a toddler. And I was in charge of making sure all the cans were facing on the shelf so that, you know, no one had to waste time figuring out where things were. You know, I was in charge of that stuff. And the cheese grater, you know, I have a photograph of it in the book. And, you know, there's something about watching your 7-year-old child grating the same cheese grater that you did.
That's a wonderful thing.
And telling them the story of the cheese grater. You know, there's a history in objects, right?
Absolutely.
The bread pan we used to make the Easter bread. My grandfather, my father's father, was a sheet metal operator, and they made sheet metal shrouds for schoolhouse lamps, industrial size lamps. And my grandmother needed a bread pan big enough for 5 pounds of dough. So he basically took a shroud, you know, and it would normally come with a hole in it for the light bulb. He didn't cut the hole out. He turned the shroud upside down, put two handles on it, and became a basin. He porcelainized it. We still use it. In fact, I made a little movie about it on my Instagram account, making the Easter bread.
Yes. No, that's wonderful. And it's great to create moments and memories with your kids. And in the process, keeping these traditions alive and at least giving them an opportunity to further live on.
Yeah.
Show our kids it's going to be done. because we're getting too far down the future path of generations removed from Italy. So I think, you know, I always talk like this. It's almost like our duty, our responsibility to actively, consciously do something to try to preserve all this, because we're at a very dangerous point in our ethnic existence.
I agree with you. To send the point home, when I finally got a publisher to publish the book, and we were deciding how to print it and what paper to choose, I said to the publisher, the only request I really have is that this book get printed in Italy, because for me, it was like a homecoming to have the book that I so cherished to produce be printed by the people in the same country that I came from.
That's great. I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I insisted. As a matter of fact, I had to ante up my own. I had to tap into my own bank account to have that done, because, you know, the price point for the book, you know, everyone's got to make some profit on it. So, you know, instead of sending it to China, and no knock against China, they do great work, but we were unable to go there and supervise. So we got to go to Italy. I got to go there and stand there with my, you know, Italian printers speaking Italian. It was just part of the experience that I just needed to be part of.
So you wrote it and you watched it be printed.
Oh yeah. Where I was on press. Yeah. Signing off on pages with the publisher, who was like a master, you know, production person on press, Daniel Power. And he liked the book. He's the one that saw a paragraph, a couple of paragraphs I wrote about the Feast of the Seven Fishes and Easter. And he read it before I knew who he was. And our sons were on the same soccer team. He was a coach. And he read it. And he says, you might have a book here. So from that point on, I was on a mission. And he's Brooklyn publisher. And he's very much interested in unique Brooklyn stories, authentic Brooklyn stories. So it was a total dovetail relationship.
That's great. Tell us, you were telling me earlier, tell me a little bit about the history of the Seven Fishes, because I know you know it well.
Well, fish symbolically and historically represents Christ. It's a symbolic metaphor. And there's two schools of thought. Some feel that it's representative of the second seven sacraments or the 7 days of the creation. So I can't, if anyone out there knows for sure, it's a southern Italian tradition. If you go to the north of Italy on Christmas, it doesn't happen the way that it happens with the southern Italians. And even in Rome, I mean, you go below Rome, I think that's where it mostly takes hold. And it's big in places with lots of Italian immigrants, like where you're from, Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, Queens, or, you know, in this New York City, we're mostly southern Italians. In fact, the majority of immigrants early on were Sicilians. They were the biggest group of Italians from that province. And I didn't know this. In Little Italy, there were little pockets of different parts of Italy, Neapolitans, Sicilians, and even from the northern part of Italy. You know, there's a pasta shop called Piemonte off Mulberry Street. And it's probably from those folks are probably from the northern part of Italy.
Probably from that region, Piemonte. Yeah, probably. Yes. So how long?
I know about the Seven Fishes history.
Okay. And how long did the whole project take you to complete?
Practically speaking, it probably took me about 7 or 8 years from start to beginning.
1 year for every fish, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Very good. And the closer for me was getting John Turturro. Don't ask me how this happened. This book took a life of its own, I swear. I shopped it around. I was with a friend of mine who did work for a very famous cemetery here in Brooklyn. And John Turturro was being honored with the DeWitt Clinton Award, which is a famous Brooklynite award. And he knew I was producing a book, and I always felt that I needed somebody of status to look at my book and give me some sort of one-line blurb. So I sat next to his wife, who's also an actress. We talked about, you know, kids, family, and I had to interject myself, and I said, Mrs. Turturro, forgive me, but I'm writing a book, and I know John is very much interested in Italian culture, his own Italian culture. He's from Naples. His family is part of his family's from Naples. He's made several movies about it. I said, would he be interested in seeing a prototype? And she said, I'm sorry, I would can't make any promises, but send us a copy, and I will take a look at it. A year later, I got an email on the train. I was on the number 6 train. I had to put the phone away 6 times because I couldn't believe that I got an email from his office saying that he loved the book and he would write anything I wanted.
That's very nice.
And from that point on, I had that as sort of like, you know, a big, powerful message to anyone that was interested in producing the book.
Sure. No, that it always helps. There's
no God. And Michael LaMonaco, the famous chef from Windows on the World, worked with my mom, and he wrote the introduction. He worked with my mom when she worked in the bank. He was, you know, a young kid in college, and he never forget her. In fact, he told me, he said, Daniel, your mother was the nicest person I've ever met, because she would bring in food from her house and rice balls. And
Very nice. So the book itself, now, just so everyone understands, it goes beyond the 7 fishes, Neil.
Yes, it's not like it. There are literally, there's about 10 dishes of fish dishes, but there's 55 recipes in total. And the rest of those recipes are just recipes, you know, bread, cookies, deli dishes, pasta lentiche, pasta fagioli, steak, pizzaiola, you know, chicken mayonnaise with fried peppers, meatball sausage, Sunday sauce.
I noticed there's lots of pictures. There's some stories as well in the book.
Oh, there's tons of stories. I went, one of the publisher's requests was that maybe I can get some recipes from some of the shops that I would go to shop in the neighborhood. And so I canvassed about 15 shops. And at the end of each shop section, there's a recipe that either is from them or one that I tried to emulate of theirs. My local pastry shop, Villa Body, which is a very famous pastry shop in Bensonhurst. So I got their story, brief, you know, paragraph in relation to my story about how they started. And they're all sort of networked. That's the interesting part about what I learned when I photographed them, is that they all sort of worked with each other at some point in their progression to own their own shop. Hmm. You know, like the family. It was just really a great little bit of information that kind of was heartwarming in a way.
It sounds like it, for sure. So, how does one get the book? Is this a...
Well, it's easily obtained on Amazon for folks that don't live in the city. It's got... and also at the Powerhouse Books, powerhousebooks.com. They're the publisher. They'll sell... They're vending signed copies. Amazon doesn't.
Okay. Well, it sounds like, I mean, I loved how you said it. It's like a book for a lot of people that.
Yeah, it's a stereotypical immigration story, you know, assimilation to American and being Americanized. And I feel like, you know, in that process, as you know, you tend to be so focused on becoming Americanized that you forget, you have to go back. Right, because when we were kids, we barely learned Italian. I spoke Italian dialect because my grandmother spoke dialect. She didn't go to school. And when I went to high school and took Italian, I thought it was going to be a breeze, but I wound up almost failing. because I didn't, you know, we didn't learn. We were taught to speak English.
Right.
Right. So, in fact, the idea of playing soccer, my kid, you know, our kids were very young. We put them in ASO, which is a soccer league here. We never played soccer. Couldn't find a soccer ball. It wasn't even on our radar until Pele showed up for the New York Cosmos. And, you know, back in the 70s. But even then, so I found myself going back to Italy almost a missing link for me, especially when I went to the South. My expressions, the way I spoke, I felt like that was always in the back of my throat that never got a chance to really flourish because we were too diligent to make sure that everyone knew we were Americans.
Right, right. Well, it was definitely different times. It was different.
Different times.
Different ways of thinking as well, but...
Yeah, back in the day, our grandparents, my grandparents fled Mussolini and all that nonsense, and it was a heartbreak for them because they didn't want their country to be ruled by a dictator.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's a great story in the book about a little Italian shop named... Italian Records, and their family fled to South America to escape because their grandparents didn't want the grandchildren to be drafted into the war. They fled, they went to South America, they came back, landed in the Bronx, and opened up a shop on 18th Avenue in Brooklyn. And they were the first ones responsible for promoting a soccer game held in Giant Stadium with the Italian national team, or it may have been the Neapolitan team of Naples, to play the American team. It was sort of like an exhibition. But, you know, it was through their impetus that that even happened. But we're all looking to go back there somehow or have some connection, don't you think?
Absolutely. There's no doubt, or we wouldn't be doing all these things.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
We'd be eating like Americans all the time.
That's right. So obviously we devote a lot of our energy and our time and our passion is for this, and obviously because we think it's pretty important.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we think about our children as well because we think
yes. It's
pretty important for them. So,
yep.
You know, like I said, I don't know if it was during the interview or before the interview, you know, I feel a certain like a duty to keep this going, for lack of a better explanation. So
I have lots of stories. We were in Naples. I went to my grandmother's church where she was married in Vico Quens. And we went to the church. It was closed, unfortunately. And we searched around for a place to eat. We finally landed on this little pizzeria. It would blow the doors off any restaurant here in the United States.
Right.
The minute we walked in, my daughter said to me, and this really went home. She said, "Daddy, it smells just like Grandma's house."
Wow. She said,
how happy was I? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, absolutely. And the fact that our house also smells like Grandma's house. So I must be doing it right somewhere. You know,
great smell.
You know, my kids like to eat broccoli rabe, you know, pasta fagioli.
Well, that's wonderful that you introduced them to all these things.
Escarole and beans, all the sort of peasant, quote-unquote peasant food, cucina povera, that we all grew up with.
That now costs a lot of money in an Italian restaurant to eat.
Yeah.
Yes. So the book is The Feast of the Seven Fishes, A Brooklyn Italian's Recipe Celebrating Food and Family by Daniel Paterna. Daniel, thank you for the interview, obviously, but... thank you for writing a book like this and keeping these kind of things going for our people.
I love to hear that. Thank you for saying that.
Because
that's what it's all about.
So thank you so much. And everybody, it's a great Christmas gift, and we still got time for that.
Yeah.
So Thank you, Daniel. Thank you to all the listeners. And as we always end every show and every moment with two simple words, stay proud. Thank you.